Today on Seculo, the White House is fuming as Netanyahu set to address Congress.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Hey, welcome to Seculo. I'm in Washington, D.C. We'll take your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And about a month before, it's July 24th, so still about a month and a few days out, before Benjamin Netanyahu addresses a joint session of Congress. And I'll explain that in a minute, why it's important that we say a joint session of Congress. We've got a new video from Prime Minister Netanyahu targeted at the American audience and the Biden administration. Guys, let's roll it.
When Secretary Blinken was recently here in Israel, we had a candid conversation. I said I deeply appreciated the support the U.S. has given Israel from the beginning of the war. But I also said something else. I said it's inconceivable that in the past few months, the administration has been withholding weapons and ammunition to Israel. Israel, America's closest ally, fighting for its life, fighting against Iran and our other common enemies. Secretary Blinken assured me that the administration is working day and night to remove these bottlenecks. I certainly hope that's the case. It should be the case. During World War II, Churchill told the United States, "Give us the tools, we'll do the job." And I say, "Give us the tools and we'll finish the job a lot faster."
Yeah, so again, that video targeted at the United States audience, at the U.S. administration, just about a month before both leaders of Congress, Republican and Democrat, from the House and the Senate, invited Prime Minister Netanyahu for a joint address. That's where he comes to address Congress as a show of support for our ally Israel. And yet, at a time when Israel is in its greatest conflict in recent history, you know, this is not like a two-week conflict here. This has been ongoing since October 7th. And of course, we all are seeing what is bubbling up at the north, in the north in Israel with Hezbollah and that conflict, which is just kind of starting, a shooting match has started. And of course, there are areas that are completely evacuated in northern Israel, but that could go to a full-scale conflict. These are common enemies, as Prime Minister Netanyahu said. And yet the Biden administration will, I want to bring you into this because the Biden administration will, has actually punished Israel for that video.
That's right. The reports are is that the White House is, quote, fuming over this. And they were supposed to be having a high-level talks with the Israelis in the White House on Thursday. That'd be tomorrow. But as a result of this, they've canceled that meeting. And one of the topics that was supposed to be discussed at this meeting was the Iranian threat. And as you heard referenced in that clip from Prime Minister Netanyahu, he is concerned about the Iranian threat and the bottleneck, as he described, of the weapons and munitions that is going to Israel. We know that Hezbollah is been called the crown jewel of the Iranian proxy groups. And now what you're seeing is the prime minister frustrated at the administration and the way that the relationship has been working, and it seems like he's fed up with that, going publicly with a social media post. It was first released on Twitter to an American audience and to the administration as well about this. And what you see is pushback now from the administration of having a high-level talk by punishing them, canceling it, about the Iranian threat on Thursday.
All right, folks, we're going to take your phone calls to 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. So you've got, again, how much of a threat is it? How much of the White House taking as a threat? If you could just cancel a meeting because you don't like a video, which is telling the people the truth. Hey, don't think that all that support they say is coming to Israel is actually getting to Israel after this conflict, which has continued to go on as Israel tries to get those remaining hostages. Israel tries to destroy Hamas, but is also really fighting Iranian proxies that want to take on America as well. And of course, you've got AOC. We'll talk about that when we come back. You know, they want to turn their back. They call Netanyahu and these Israelis, you know, war criminals. But that's the anti-Semite caucus in D.C. We'll be right back on Seculo. Take your calls. Support the work of the ACLJ. You know, we've got that office in Jerusalem, but just because of this fight, ACLJ.org. Donate today. We'll be right back.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, and our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. aclj.org.
After nearly 50 years, Roe v. Wade, the tragic ruling that manufactured a so-called right to abortion, has been overturned by the United States Supreme Court. This is the moment the ACLJ has been fighting for. It's the biggest victory we've achieved in our three-decade-long fight against the soulless abortion industry. And believe me, abortionists like Planned Parenthood are devastated. This victory would not have been possible without the steadfast prayer and support of ACLJ members like you. On behalf of the entire ACLJ, I thank you for standing with us against the abortion industry and helping us save defenseless babies. I thank you for making this victory possible. And I ask you for your continued prayer and support as we continue to battle against barbaric new abortion laws across our nation.
This is not an address that would usually be highly controversial in Washington, D.C. It's actually one of those times in Washington, usually in the past, that you'd see the most bipartisan support, the most you'd see the clapping from both the right and the left side of the joint session of Congress coming together, because there has been widespread support for the Jewish state of Israel. But now there is division, especially amongst the Democrat Party, strong division it's not just two or three Democrats anymore, offshoots. This is really, I think, as we said, it's starting to divide the Democrat Party and make it very difficult for the Biden administration and Democrats to play, on the one hand, pro-Israel, on the other hand, listen to the Israeli leaders say, hey, they say that they're pro-Israel, but they're not sending us the weapons that we need to replenish the stocks that we need to have the weapons that we need to finish this war against Hamas. That we are the U.S. number one ally, that we fight common enemies that both want to destroy the United States and Israel, and yet you are not sending us the munitions we need. So this speech will be interesting because about a month away, July 24th, I think you'll still see a lot of members of Congress there. It will be a very full room. But likely will, what we noticed is even in some video and during the break with like J.B. Raskin, is that there are members of Congress who never would have thought about not attending that meeting. They don't want to say they're going to be there. I think they will be, but I think it's because they've got a base of support that is that protest base, and they don't want to upset them when they return to their districts at the end of the summer.
Well, I think the member of Congress that is most in the most precarious situation here is the minority leader, Hakeem Jeffries, because, yes, you're getting tweets like this, and we can put it up on the screen, as a response to the video from Prime Minister Netanyahu. This was from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She said, "This man should not be addressing Congress. He is a war criminal and certainly has no regard for U.S. law, which explicitly designed to prevent U.S. weapons from facilitating human rights abuses." We understand she's going to say that. That's the Hamas caucus, as we call them. But what you're also starting to see is people like the former Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, break with the current leader of her party, whom she endorsed, who she has given a lot of aid to within of helping him know the ropes. The Democrats hope that he is the next Speaker of the House. This is their guy. Now, Hakeem Jeffries has actually done a pretty good job when it comes to Israel. He showed support by being at a bipartisan at the vigil and rally they had in front of the U.S. Capitol after October 7th. Yep. He has been in meetings and shown support for the state of Israel. But now you have not only AOC, but you have the Jamie Raskins, and you even have Nancy Pelosi. This is what she said. This is bite number two about the leadership of the party, both Chuck Schumer and Jeffries, signing off on this invitation to invite Prime Minister Netanyahu to Congress. Let's go ahead and play bite two and hear what Nancy Pelosi had to say.
If you were still Speaker, would you have invited him?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I think that I think this is wrong. Frankly, I didn't approve of his being invited the last time, but the Speaker just on his own invited him without consulting with the rest of the leadership. And he came and he criticized President Obama for the masterful work that he had done with the nuclear agreement regarding Iran to stop them from developing a nuclear weapon. And I thought it was completely inappropriate. I feel very sad that he has been invited.
So, Jordan, you have the former Speaker of the House criticizing the move by the current leadership of her party. It seems like Hakeem Jeffries is in the most precarious situation for Democrats at this time.
Well, I think that's a good spot for conservatives, a good spot for Republicans. But, you know, on this issue, I don't love that. I don't love the fact that we're having to make this a partisan issue. That's not good for Israel. You know, we don't the fact that this is damaging and disrupting the Democrat Party, maybe that helps our candidates and people that we like and support come November. But what it's not helping right now is get any hostages home. It's not helping Israel defend itself. And again, I say, if we can't unite around anything in the United States, and that was like the last issue, especially, you know, foreign issue, international issue, that united most Republicans and Democrats from the House and the Senate, it was a show of unity for the Jewish state of Israel. If that's no longer present in Washington, D.C., we unite around nothing. And if we unite around nothing, you know, this is what when you get to a complete deadlock and you've got to either have, you know, I'm sure we'd all love to see a Republican House, Senate, and White House after this election cycle because it's the only way things would get done. I mean, the pressure on these leaders right now, the Democrat leaders, and Hakeem Jeffries, you wonder, Will, how long it will be until he rescinds that invitation. I wonder if Chuck Schumer will rescind the invitation. I mean, he gave a speech that was very nasty about Netanyahu. Or does he use the speech to say, listen, I've been really tough on Netanyahu, so I'm going to let him come and speak, and we'll see what he has to say, both publicly and in meetings with us, about the support they need, and we'll decide if we're going to give it to them or not. I mean, you could play it that way, but you are giving Netanyahu, since the biggest stage in the United States, at a time, you know, in the middle of the summer, right before they go on recess, to address not just the members of Congress, but the American people. And I think that the American people, for the most part, watching a bunch of Democrats protest that, are going to be pretty sickened. They are not. Most Americans are not the protesters in the streets. But as we've talked about with Jeff Balaban, Will, that we have seen this encroaching anti-Israel kind of belief system, not just in the Democrat Party, but inside even our own churches and communities on, you know, maybe the right side of the aisle. It started this questioning about whether we should support the Jewish state of Israel.
That's right. And as we saw the reports that the White House is fuming, we're going to see how much clout on Capitol Hill the Biden administration still has. Is he going to be able to effectively get the leadership within the House and Senate to rescind their invitation to Prime Minister Netanyahu as they canceled the meeting on Thursday with the high-ranking Israeli delegation that was going to be meeting about the Iranian threat? So I do think that we're going to see how this plays out, and there's only a few weeks away, and these trips for a foreign leader to come speak to Congress, there's a lot of prep work that goes into that. That's not just you hop on a plane, you show up at the Capitol. There's, especially in the climate that's in D.C. right now, that's a high-risk, high-security situation where the prime minister has a lot of planning to do with Congress to make sure that that goes off without a hitch. I think that we will find out probably in the next week or so what kind of pressure the White House puts on Congress, what kind of pressure within the own party, within the House, we see that gets put on Hakeem Jeffries. And I think that Chuck Schumer is in a much more comfortable position because the Senate Democrats, even when they say, like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders are saying that they will protest this, they typically don't have as much pressure on Senator Schumer as the House members can have on the minority leader in that situation. But just as a matter of policy and where we're at, I agree with everything you say. It's almost beyond belief that this is where we're at in the middle of summer in an election year, and seeing how divisive standing with an ally can be. With all of the foreign policy games that the United States plays, the one democracy, the one human rights protector in that region, we are now having protests and canceled meetings over having the leader of Israel come speak to Congress.
And how serious is Biden and the administration really taking the Iranian threat if they're willing to cancel a meeting on that threat with Israel because of Netanyahu's video about not having the munitions they need that they were promised to the United States? Listen, when he speaks in English like that, that's not a message for his people. That's not a message for Israelis. That's a message for you. It's a message for me. It's a message for us at the ACLJ. It's when we are able to activate not only our office in ACLJ Jerusalem, and Jeff Balaban will be joining the broadcast later, but also our work right here in Washington, D.C., where I have been this week. President Biden is betraying Israel. That's even as Hezbollah ramps up their attacks on Israel, a second front in that conflict. And clearly we've got the squad in Congress has become that Hamas proxy, the anti-Semite caucus, if you will. It's outrageous, but we're taking urgent action, and we need your support at ACLJ.org. In the next 2 days, we're preparing to send a large demand letter to the UN Commission of Inquiry to stop their lawfare against our ally Israel. We've just filed a FOIA against the Biden administration for funding pro-Hamas, quote, love this, climate organizations with your tax dollars. Like, that's what they're working on right now in the Gaza Strip is climate, but millions are going to it of your taxpayer dollars. We filed that FOIA, and we've just filed 3 written submissions at the UN to defend Israel. We take urgent action to defend Israel in its greatest time of need. We need your tax-deductible support. Donate today at ACLJ.org. Your supports make our fight possible. Donate today. That's ACLJ.org. We'll be right back.
After nearly 50 years, Roe versus Wade, the tragic ruling that manufactured a so-called right to abortion, has been overturned by the United States Supreme Court. This is the moment the ACLJ has been fighting for. It's the biggest victory we've achieved in our 3-decade-long fight against the soulless abortion industry. And believe me, abortionists like Planned Parenthood are devastated. This victory would not have been possible without the steadfast prayer and support of ACLJ members like you. On behalf of the entire ACLJ, I thank you for standing with us against the abortion industry and helping us save defenseless babies. I thank you for making this victory possible. And I ask you for your continued prayer and support as we continue to battle against barbaric new abortion laws across our nation.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, and our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. we remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. aclj.org.
Jordan, we have Christy Compagnone, who is our senior managing attorney here at the ACLJ, joining us to talk about and give an update on that case out in Nevada. You'll remember that is the one where the high school student was forced to perform an obscene monologue in one of her high school classes. And we have been suing the school district on behalf of that student and fighting back against the obscenity that was produced in this curriculum. And they actually have some updates from last week as they were out in Nevada. And Jordan, I'll let you take it.
Yeah, I mean, Christy, we know people have seen on this broadcast the video of the mother in this situation going to the school board meeting and being shut down because she read some of the monologue and it was too obscene to read for adults at the school board meeting, but not too obscene for, at the time, you know, 15-year-olds to be reading out in class as part of a required reading that you had to perform other people's monologues. So we've been, again, taking the depositions both last week. I think there's more coming this week as well. Tell people where we are in this case and just kind of remind them. It's a great way to remind people about when the ACLJ takes these cases on, it's not just the day that it makes the news and the day that you've got the video of the mother at the school board meeting. We fight these for years if we have to.
Yeah, exactly. So last week we deposed a school administrator, the teacher, and several students. And I'll be honest, it was rather alarming to realize that this kind of ideology is permeating the school completely. The school clearly doesn't see how damaging the sexualization of students is, and they're not willing to take any responsibility for that. In fact, administrators mentioned that all of the students talk this way regularly anyway, and that you can hear it in the hallways, so it doesn't really see why it's that big of a deal. So we really feel like we need to go back next week and take more depositions. We're going to hear from other school officials, and we want to get more of their thoughts on this responsibility of the school. And, you know, do they have a responsibility to protect these students from this rampant sexualization that we're seeing? Even if students are saying that in their own time, can a 14 or 15-year-old actually consent to read that out loud in the classroom? And then we're also going to hopefully talk with more students, too, to get their thoughts and reflections on it.
Yeah, I mean, these were the kind of things, if you would have said back in school, even I think unthinkable to say, definitely remember when we were in school, if I was in school, I mean, you would be in serious trouble. It doesn't matter if you're in a public school, private school, Christian school, regular, you know, any kind of place of education. There's no way you were just walking down the hallway using language like this. I'm sure things have changed. I don't doubt that there's more of this kind of language being used, and you've got social media and places like that. You could, on the one hand, feel for these districts. But if they are pushing it, because I think, Christy, what has to be important here is when they have those students are minors. When this was all happening, they were all minors, so they can't consent to using obscenities, and their parents weren't being asked to consent to their students doing that. And I think that's very important for our audience to kind of understand these distinctions. These cases take time, but it's the parents' rights that we're fighting for here. And it's like in these schools, I know they'd love to have no parental rights, but that's what we're fighting for, is kind of the last hope of parents still having some say in their own children's upbringing in these public schools.
Exactly. How is there possibly a pedagogical interest for the school to be allowing the students to read this? I mean, even in the most sensitive of topics in health ed, you are getting parental consent, even in these public schools. I know for a fact that in several schools in Virginia, that they're required to ask permission to read a book such as The Kite Rider, which is actually historical, but it has really sensitive and severe sexualized topics. So why then is it appropriate, just because it's a theater class, that they be able to enact and actually memorize and recite this kind of content? It doesn't make any sense from the purpose of trying to teach them something for theater class. It doesn't make sense in an English class, and it just doesn't have a place in these schools.
Christy, we filed the amended complaint in this last May, so 13 months ago, and we survived a motion to dismiss early, which was a big victory in this case for the student. And now we're in this deposition phase, and I know you said you've got more after what was learned last week that you need to go back out and depose more individuals. What does the timeline look like on this as we move forward? What comes next in this case?
Absolutely. So at this point, our discovery timeline, which is when we can take the depositions and ask all of the questions and speak with the witnesses, that's ending at the end of June. But we have asked the court for an extension because we believe at this point it's important to bring in an expert witness to actually testify to what is pedagogical. What does that mean? Does this have a legitimate pedagogical interest for this theater classroom? And so if the judge permits, we're going to bring in an expert witness to be able to get that on the record with an expert report. From there, we go into what's called summary judgment briefing. And that's where we will tell the judge there's no evidence here that you know, says that what our complaints facts are not correct. So we say, look, all of the evidence is here. We don't need to go in front of a jury. From just a pure legal standpoint, you can rule for us in favor of us. Whereas the other side will ask for the court to dismiss the claim before it goes to trial. So that's the next real hurdle we've got to face is making it through summary judgment. But of course, at this point, I think there is such a dispute of facts that we are more than likely going to be going to trial here.
All right, folks. Christy, we thank you for that update. And we want you to continue to update our the ACLJ, our supporters, as well, because as they know, I mean, again, you know, 13 months in filing, surviving again, motions to dismiss, then doing the depositions, then summary judgment, trying to survive that, and then going to trial. This is that commitment that the ACLJ makes to these issues. And Christy, we appreciate you joining us today on the show. And Will, I mean, again, I think it, as we talk other issues today, we talk about Israel, where we commit to the offices. Of course, here in the United States, we have offices around the country. I'm in the office in Washington, D.C. This week, where Christy usually is. But on these legal issues that are fact-specific, that start out with a parent and a teacher, sometimes, you know what, the school district says, you were right, ACLJ. We shouldn't have let this happen. Can't believe this happened. And, you know, we get a quick fix, a quick win. But, Will, more often than not, these days, we're having to fight because we're fighting up against a very different kind of school, school district, and school board.
That's right. And unfortunately, it is starting to become a trend where it doesn't just get settled with a simple demand letter, as we've had vast success with for decades at the ACLJ. But many times what we're seeing now is that either the offenses were so egregious that it can't just be remedied by a demand letter, or that the demand letter isn't taken seriously or is ignored, and therefore we have to go to court. And that's why your support of the ACLJ, we're able to offer yep. that service to these families who, just by sending their kids to school, were never thinking they were going to have to file lawsuits against that school. But we're seeing that's a reality. It's at no cost to them, so they don't have to worry about funds from their pocketbooks not being able to put food on the table or to pay for the life of their family to fight this in court, because the ACLJ members play such a pivotal role in that by allowing us to offer those services at no cost to our clients.
Donate today at ACLJ.org. A second half hour is coming up as Will takes the reins of the broadcast. We've got Jeff Balaban joining us live from Israel. You don't want to miss that. But go to ACLJ.org and donate today. We'll be right back.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. aclj.org.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo.
Welcome back to Seculo. Executive producer Will Haynes here. And I want to hear from you this half hour, so give me a call at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We'll be taking your calls on whether it be ACLJ cases that you've heard about these last few weeks, or about the topic of Israel. That's right. If you've just joined us this half hour, what we've been talking about is that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu put out a video last night, and it was calling out the U.S. administration for the delay tactics, the bottleneck, when it comes to the agreements that the United States has with Israel of providing military assistance as they continue to battle Hamas in the Gaza Strip. They are saying they are close to their goal of taking Rafah, so that would hopefully eliminate a lot of the need, as a lot of the offensive operations could potentially start winding down as they continue to take out Hamas leadership. In the next segment, we'll be joined by Jeff Balaban from Jerusalem. So if you have a question for him about what he sees over there in Israel at our ACLJ Jerusalem office, you can call as well at 1-800-684-3110, and we'll take your call during that segment. But also, we have an update on the hostage situation in the final segment of the broadcast with Cece Heil. So if you have a question about that as well, you can call 1-800-684-3110. But before we get to that, I do want to take a phone call right off the bat here in this segment. We're going to go to Roberta in Colorado. Thank you, Roberta. You're calling. You're on the air.
Thank you. Wanted to just say that we don't feel, as Christians, that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu should come to Congress. We feel that there is way too much hatred in our government, way too much hatred on the streets, way too much anti-Semitism. We pray for them. We pray for our Congress. But at this point in time, the way our government is acting, it is just too dangerous, we feel, for him to come to Colorado. I mean, to come to
Congress. Roberta, I understand the feeling. As you saw, even how aggressive the protests were on George Washington University's campus just months ago. As you see this continued push, as the anti-Semitism creeps from the college campus throughout Congress and into the fabric of the United States at this point, it's something that we have to fight. We can't just sit back and watch this cancer grow in the United States. It's evil. It's vile. And I understand your concerns for the Prime Minister coming and addressing Congress. You're going to see displays by elected officials in the United States protesting or by not showing up, or maybe even showing up and making a statement in some way, trying to get a 15 minutes of fame by calling out the Prime Minister from the gallery. It is a situation where you're not really certain how it will play out, as we're just a few weeks away from this. It's scheduled for July 24th, this joint address to Congress. And as we discussed earlier with Jordan, there's the concern as well that Hakeem Jeffries may cave to pressure from within his own party and rescind his invitation, as this was a show of unity, an odd show of unity and bipartisanship on Capitol Hill by having both Senator Schumer and Minority Leader Jeffries join Speaker Johnson and Leader McConnell by offering this invitation to Prime Minister Netanyahu. Folks, we're going to come back with Jeff Balaban from our Jerusalem office. But I do want to remind you that at this time, when President Biden is betraying Israel and Hezbollah in the north, the crown jewel of Iranian proxies, is ramping up their attacks on Israel, you could see a second front very soon of this war at a time when the prime minister is saying we need more weapons. And we see the squad has clearly become a Hamas proxy within our own U.S. Congress. The ACLJ is not standing by and watching it happen. We are taking urgent action. We need your support at ACLJ.org. In the next days, we're sending a demand letter to the UN Commission of Inquiry to stop their lawfare against our ally. We're sending FOIAs to the Biden administration. And we just filed 3 submissions to the UN. Support our work today at ACLJ.org.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, and our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. ACLJ.org.
After nearly 50 years, Roe v. Wade, the tragic ruling that manufactured a so-called right to abortion, has been overturned by the United States Supreme Court. This is the moment the ACLJ has been fighting for. It's the biggest victory we've achieved in our 3-decade-long fight against the soulless abortion industry. And believe me, abortionists like Planned Parenthood are devastated. This victory would not have been possible without the steadfast prayer and support of ACLJ members like you. On behalf of the entire ACLJ, I thank you for standing with us against the abortion industry and helping us save defenseless babies. I thank you for making this victory possible. And I ask you for your continued prayer and support as we continue to battle against barbaric new abortion laws across our nation.
Welcome back to Seculo. Executive producer Will Haynes sitting in today. And I am now joined by Jeff Balaban, who is the director of our ACLJ Jerusalem office. Jeff, what we're seeing yesterday with the video that Prime Minister Netanyahu put out, calling on the Biden administration to really live up to their end of the deal, talking about conversations he had with Secretary Blinken about these arms and munitions shipments and transfers and agreements that the United States has with Israel. It seems like the prime minister is kind of fed up with the administration. We've seen the slow burn, if you will, of the relationship between President Biden and Prime Minister Netanyahu, as it's been rocky for the last few months. But now it does kind of seem like the prime minister has had enough. What was your take when you saw this video from the prime minister, as well as the reaction from the White House?
So I want to contextualize this. This problem didn't start recently, and it wasn't started on Israel's side. From the beginning, when Joe Biden became president, if you recall, he completely ignored and snubbed Israel. He treated Bibi terribly. He refused to talk to him for months and months and months. And then there was pressure because it was looking so obvious and so bad. And let's face it, most Americans still support Israel. Just Biden administration was running towards its left. And so there was some pressure, and he met. But even when he met, it was very cold. He met with members of the opposition, other people beforehand. I don't know if it was members of the opposition, but he certainly met with the president before he met with the prime minister. And the president was from a different party originally. He's not in the party now. He's the president. So this has been a long-standing thing. And the truth is, since the Obama-Biden administration, they started by demonizing Netanyahu specifically and his party. And they've been doing it all along. So this is the war. One would have hoped the horrific October 7th attacks would have ameliorated that. But instead, what we see is that Biden really, they say one thing out of one side of their mouths and behave a different way in private. And that is, they say we support Israel. On the other hand, they have been withholding and pressuring and frankly extorting Israel all along. Now, in Israel, this is not primarily a political matter. It's a literal survival matter. And so, and not political survival, physical survival. And what happened, this is still a very traumatized society waging an ongoing war. And I'll just give an example of what that means, because just earlier today, not that long ago, I was meeting with a general who's also been a minister in the government, not in the current government, but we were talking about, he's now advising the government. And I asked him militarily, how much time does Israel need to really do what it needs to in Gaza? And he said, oh, at least 3 years. We have to demilitarize Gaza. We have to take, at a minimum, take the fangs out, as he said, of the jaws of the tiger. And he said, that's 3 years. So the pressure, end it now, is destroying Israel's ability to just survive. And the Arab world, some Arab friends now, but the Arab anti-Israel world and the rest of the anti-Israel world, Iran, they see it and it's strengthening them. So in desperation, Netanyahu did a video where he didn't yell at Biden. He paid him plenty of compliments, but he also did criticize him. I would say, frankly, very gently and diplomatically, considering the realities, what's at stake. And of course, the world exploded, and many of them blamed Netanyahu. He is just trying to help his country survive.
What we have seen out of this administration when it comes to Israel and when it also comes to Iran is what you should not be seeing out of an American administration. We've seen from the beginning of this administration a hostility towards our greatest ally in the region and a willingness to turn a blind eye or to take the Iranians at their word in many scenarios. And we knew from the issues with Robert Malley as he tried to spearhead the negotiations to try to bring the Iranians back into a nuclear agreement, and then all of a sudden he doesn't have a security clearance because he was probably too close with the Iranians, as it were. That's kind of the context of this administration. But now you see that as a reaction to this video, as you mentioned, there was criticism, but it wasn't harsh. It wasn't yelling at the president, and especially with how critical our government is of the Israelis. I agree. The tone was very subdued for what I'm sure the true feelings within the prime minister are currently with this administration. But what you see as a reaction is headlines that the White House is fuming and they punish the Israelis by canceling a high-level diplomatic talks that were supposed to occur tomorrow in Washington, D.C., over the Iranian threat. So when they are upset with Israel, they punish them by giving Iran another pass. How does this square with the reality of the world when you have a very real threat? You have Hezbollah ramping up their attacks. You see imagery that don't make it on the news of hillsides burning in northern Israel because of these Iranian attacks that are through their proxy Hezbollah. But yet, we're going to give Iran a pass by not do the work of the government to have diplomatic talks with Israel, as well as there's reports that some of the munitions they're concerned about are $18 billion worth of F-15s, which haven't moved forward after a hold was removed from congressional leaders. So I just don't understand why the administration is so willing to give Iran a pass, but yet still drill down and punish Israel at the same time.
I'm going to suggest, Will, that you actually do understand, and you're being diplomatic and tossing the question to me. I'm going to suggest that you understand that Joe Biden has never really been Israel's friend. And since the Obama-Biden administration, he has actually been truly Israel's enemy. Listen, Israel is America's ally. Israel is on the front lines of a war that you see. They run to America's streets, let alone the streets of the world, and they hoist a Palestinian flag and they chant, death to America, death to America, more than they chant death to Israel. This is a global anti-American evil that is funded up by Iran and by America's rivals and hostiles like China and others. And we have an absentee White House, and they're on the wrong side of this. Worse than absentee. Israel is an ally, and Joe Biden is publicly trying to treat it like a puppet. And when Israel dares, in desperation, after months of truly extortion by the White House, to say, look, honestly, the good side is that Israel understands that the American public doesn't want to see an anti-Israel government. And so gently, really relatively gently, goes and says, look, this is a problem, right? And it's somewhat mildly critical. their reaction, which is to attack them. Let me tell you, there's a famous story that those of us with long memories recall. When Joe Biden was a young senator, back many decades ago, Menachem Begin was the prime minister of Israel, and Joe Biden directly threatened him. He was on the Foreign Affairs Committee, I think it was then, with withholding some foreign aid or some loans. And the prime minister of Israel then reacted to Joe Biden, who was young and a bully, and said, you know, we are not Jews on trembling knees, meaning don't threaten us. Jews have survived plenty, and if we have to survive without it, we'll have to. It will mean a lot more dead Jews. But you know what? In today's day and age, it also means a compromised safety for the United States of America, because the Iranians, with nuclear ambitions that this White House is not stopping but is helping, also seek intercontinental ballistic missiles, not to reach Israel. They can reach Israel already, but to reach Chicago, to reach Washington. And that is the threat to America. And this White House is exactly on the wrong side of things.
Jeff, as we look forward to the joint address of Congress that Prime Minister Netanyahu will be doing in late July, the concern that we've even heard from some of the callers is that Prime Minister Netanyahu will be coming into a city that has been witnessing rampant anti-Semitism. And I truly see it as a moment for those of us that want to combat anti-Semitism to highlight it as it comes. You know that we're going to see protests in D.C. You know that you're going to see vile pro-Hamas chanting. But I see it as an opportunity, and you have to give the Prime Minister credit for being willing to come into the cesspool of D.C. at a time like this. But that really should be incumbent upon us to point out to our friends, to our churches, to our communities, look at what they're saying in D.C. as the Prime Minister visits. And look what members of Congress are saying. I feel like it's going to be much worse than just some signs that say from the river to the sea.
Yeah. Well, here's what we know. We know that the media, no matter what happens, is going to treat this as though Benjamin Netanyahu is trying to destroy some fictitious bipartisan friendship to Israel. There is no bipartisan friendship to Israel. There are a few Democrats who aren't terrible, and there are a lot of Republicans who are great, and a few Republicans who aren't. But by and large, this is a very partisan issue and has been for a very, very long time, despite all the talking points. The media has been having a field day promoting literally Hamas's terrorist, genocidal, anti-Semitic. And so that's what's going to happen. But I love the fact that the Prime Minister of Israel will come to Congress. And you know what? That's right. Let us call out. We'll see who stands with Israel and who stands against them. And that's what they're afraid of. They don't want that to happen because they want to say they're pro-Israel and still hurt Israel. This is calling it out. And remember, they're coming at the request of the People's House. And I hope that Benjamin Netanyahu does come representing the State of Israel, our greatest ally, and that it's received by the people who need to see it well.
Thank you, Jeff, for joining us today and for your insight as you join us from Jerusalem. Folks, what you've seen already on this broadcast today, you've seen me here in our media studios. You've seen Jordan out of our D.C. offices as he meets in high-level meetings about the work of the ACLJ. You've seen Jeff in Jerusalem, literally from Jerusalem. Not many shows, especially in this space, do you see bringing on a team member that is in Jerusalem to break down the news of the day like this and the work of the organization. And you've seen Christy Compagnone call in about a case that we're fighting in Nevada for a student's rights. It takes you to keep this happening. Folks, join us today. Donate at ACLJ.org. And if you can, become a champion.
After nearly 50 years, Roe versus Wade, the tragic ruling that manufactured a so-called right to abortion, has been overturned by the United States Supreme Court. This is the moment the ACLJ has been fighting for. It's the biggest victory we've achieved in our three-decade-long fight against the soulless abortion industry. And believe me, abortionists like Planned Parenthood are devastated. This victory would not have been possible without the steadfast prayer and support of ACLJ members like you. On behalf of the entire ACLJ, I thank you for standing with us against the abortion industry and helping us save defenseless babies. I thank you for making this victory possible, and I ask you for your continued prayer and support as we continue to battle against barbaric new abortion laws across our nation.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, and our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. aclj.org.
Welcome back to Seculo. Executive producer Will Haynes sitting in today. And if you've got any calls or questions that you want to get in this segment, we've got some phone lines open. Call at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. If you're on YouTube or Rumble, go ahead and let us know where you're calling, where you're watching from. Just go ahead and put it in the chat. It really helps boost engagement and gets the video out to more people. Like and subscribe as always. But now we're going to turn to a little bit of a hopeful story here as we talk about a lot of the issues that are going on with Israel and the fracture within the U.S. government between even not just Republicans and Democrats, but even within the Democrat Party itself. As you see, the more anti-Semitic wing led by people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar, and Rashida Tlaib. And now you're seeing people like Nancy Pelosi agree with them that maybe Prime Minister Netanyahu shouldn't have been invited to come speak to Congress. You see this growing divide between people that support our ally Israel and people that, frankly, are supporting their enemy, the terrorist organization known as Hamas. So we've heard this, and it can be very disheartening to see what's playing out in our nation's capital. But there is a little bit of potentially hopeful news that came out of Israel. And that's something, if you've been watching or following the ACLJ, you know that we had represented the families of hostages. We led a delegation to Washington, D.C., where they were able to speak to members of Congress from both parties to talk about the struggle that they have with their family members being held in captivity by Hamas. And it's long been kind of assumed at this point that many of the remaining hostages, those that hadn't been rescued, were probably no longer living. But there was a little bit of a spark of hope last week when Israel was able to rescue four hostages that were still being held by Hamas as they continue their offensive in Gaza. But what we're seeing now, and I have Cece Heil joining me in the studio, is there's a report now out of Israel. And this was something that Cece, within calls and messages with our team and, yeah, and the colleagues that we work with in Israel, came out this morning that there are potentially many more hostages still living,
yeah,
that are still being held by Hamas, but it could bring some hope that more hostages could be returned to their families.
That's right. So a senior Israeli negotiator has confirmed with certainty that there are dozens of hostages still alive. That has been confirmed with certainty. And so I think that gives us hope, and it also steps up the urgency that we need to keep demanding that Hamas release the remaining hostages. And that cannot be, you know, I think they've doubled down now. Israel has doubled down saying, okay, we are in negotiations, and Hamas always stalls those negotiations. It's always, Israel will agree, they will make concession after concession, and then Hamas stalls those agreements. But right now, I think Israel has doubled down saying they cannot have any agreements unless these hostages are released. And I think that's a good position. And I think the families of the hostages, you know, have pushed and wanted that. But now that we have seen this hopeful report confirmed with certainty that dozens of the hostages are alive, they feel time is of the essence. They must move quickly. And this is not a negotiable point. They have to be released.
That's right. And unfortunately, as we've pointed out many times, is that Hamas, because of their depravity, is very good at public relations, especially when they are able to reach a community within the United States and around the world that will buy into their lies. And the Wall Street Journal last week had a piece out that says Gaza chief's brutal calculation, civilian bloodshed will help Hamas. And they had obtained, the Wall Street Journal had obtained direct messaging between Sinwar, who is the military chief of Hamas in Gaza, and other colleagues of his about things like, we have the Israelis right where we want them. And the extrapolation of that is that the more civilian Palestinians that die, the worse Israel looks, the better chances of Hamas surviving this conflict.
Yeah.
And it should prove to the world, although many will turn a blind eye to it, the reality of what Israel is facing. And when you see the administration slow walking aid to Israel that has been agreed upon, this isn't even saying, hey, let's come up with brand new ways to fulfill these things to the Israelis. These are agreements that we have with Israel for their security. They're slow walking these things, whether it be F-15s, a fleet of F-15s, or the munitions that we'd agreed upon. It's only helping Hamas. Mm-hmm. And the longer Hamas can survive with these hostages in their captivity, using yes. them as human shields, not really caring about their lives at all, the likelihood of their survival greatly diminishes. So the problem that we see here and what we fight for is for the administration to recognize this reality.
Yeah.
And instead of giving sweetheart deals to Hamas to try to get them to come to the table, join Israel in demanding the release of the hostages yeah. before anything else can be negotiated.
Right, and that's where I would maybe just brag a little bit on the ACLJ and the work that we do, because that is really literally our job, is to keep pointing. I know you mentioned it earlier, Jordan mentioned it earlier on this broadcast. We are sending a response to the Commission of Inquiry at the United Nations. Now, the whole title of that is Commission of Inquiry on the Occupied Palestinian Territory. So in the title of this supposedly independent commission, you already see the bias. But they release report after report. Just like you said, Hamas, they are the greatest spin masters. They take truth and reality and actually just turn it on its head and make the, you know, Israel, who is the innocent victim of terrible crimes, they turn them to be the aggressor. They turn them to make them the oppressor and the bad guy. And so our job is always to come in, and we do this regularly, and we do it unceasingly. We do it consistently. We come in and we remind them, okay, you're not looking at law. You're not looking at history. You're not looking at facts. Here are the facts. Here's the law. Here's the history. And you are completely wrong about this. Israel is not an occupier. They have an absolute legal right to be in those territories. Those are Israel's rightful territories. They have a right to self-defense under international law. We point that out time and time again. We'll do that to the administration as well. And we just keep pointing to the truth. And we believe that in the end, truth will win out and Israel will be vindicated.
And folks, as you've seen today on this broadcast, you've seen the way that we analyze what's going on between the administration and the Prime Minister of Israel, whether it be the case in Nevada, which we filed our amended complaint in that 13 months ago and are in now the discovery phase of that case. But we're fighting for the rights of a student that have been violated in the way that she was forced to perform obscene content in her high school class. And we have attorneys that are working diligently on that. But also, as the hostages fall out of the news because the TVs are taken over with the protest on campus or the fight between Prime Minister Netanyahu and President Biden, we don't forget the hostages. We don't forget the students that have their rights violated. We are nimble enough at the ACLJ to handle all of these for a long time, whether it be 13 months with that student, since October 7th, when hostages were taken for these hostages, as we continue to fight and advocate on behalf of hostages. Or whether it be like the whistleblowers, Marcus Allen, that took a long time. 27 months he was without pay, and we got a victory in that case. We can do that only because of your support of the ACLJ. We don't charge our clients for this work. Go to ACLJ.org today and make a donation. We appreciate it. Talk to you tomorrow.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today. aclj.org.